Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Everybody, we got a great one today. You know, for a change, NPR's senior political correspondent Domenico Montanaro joins us. I believe Domenico is the first NPR correspondent to grace this podcast, and we established something very fundamental about NPR right off the bat, which is that it's not NPR's job to be neutral. It's NPR's job to be objective. As an example, Domenico points out right away that the last presidential election was not stolen. Now, I would draw from that conclusion that Trump is either delusional or evil or both. I'm not sure that Domenico would go that far, at least publicly. I didn't think to ask him. But it's hard not to draw that conclusion if you acknowledge that Joe Biden won the last presidential election, which, of course, he did. And I think that should be a big issue in the campaign, because from the polling I've seen, 85% of Trump voters say they believe that Trump won the last election. That's the exit polling I've seen throughout the primaries. So 15% of Trump voters think that Trump lost and still voted for him. Or that more than 15% of Trump voters think Trump lost but don't want to admit to someone who's polling them, which means, well, I'm not sure what it means, but I think it means that a lot of Trump voters don't care that he knows he lost or that he's delusional. They just are aligned with him on issues like immigration or Ukraine or climate change or abortion or I don't know. But I think this is a good issue for us. Joe Biden won the election and Donald Trump refuses to accept that. And now Trump wants to free all the people convicted of crimes on January 6th. He said that. That's what he said. That's what he said this week. And then show footage of these scumbags beating the crap out of the Capitol Police and the Washington, D.C. police. I think that's a good ad. But, you know, what do I know? Maybe those 15% who don't think Trump won and still want him are just jerks. Come on, Al, what are you saying? That only 15% of Trump supporters are jerks? No, not at all. I'm saying that the 15% of Trump supporters who think Trump lost and still are for him, that a very high percentage of them may well be jerks. See? Isn't it a good thing that I didn't get into this with Domenico? It's not an NPR kind of discussion. And yet it fascinates me. I think this is the kind of thinking you have to do if you want to win campaigns, but maybe it isn't. Well, we've got a lot of time to chew over these kind of deep questions. Another eight plus months. Another question I have is, when are we finally going to get a damn trial? By all rights, we should be starting the hush money trial by now, but the damn Southern District of New York dumped 200,000 pages of documents on them. But now the Manhattan DA wants to get on with it. And I say, let's get the damn trial going. But then again, the judge has to make that final decision. We don't want a mistrial because Franken rushed the trial. Of course, this is the Stormy Daniels hush money trial and the Karen McDougal hush money trial. Adult film actress Stormy Daniels received $130,000 from Michael Cohen. And Playboy model Karen McDougal received $150,000. And Donald Trump denies that he had sex with either one of them. Now, Daniels, McDougal, and Cohen are set to testify in the trial. So here's the question. If you were Donald Trump's lawyers, would you let him testify in the trial? The answer, of course, is no. But will Trump insist on testifying? And the answer is No. But I hope he does. But he won't. Well, I'm glad we got those nagging issues out of the way before we go to my interview with NPR's senior political correspondent, Domenico Montanaro. It's a great one, you know, for a change. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
I found a tweet you wrote about the Robert Herr report. Because I wonder, like, how objective NPR's senior political correspondent and editor has to be. And sometimes I think, oh my God, it's so constricting. It must be. But then you said that on this tweet, you said that the Herr report was astonishingly misleading. Is that showing bias or is that just straight ahead reporting?
Well, I think that there's a difference between objectivity and neutrality. And I certainly don't believe in journalistic neutrality.
Got it.
I think that our North Star is the truth, and whatever is independently verifiable is what we should go with. The election was not stolen, for example. It's been proven to have not been. So, you know, I think that we need to lean into muscularly as we can when we know things to be what they are. Now, I mean, it can be somewhat seen as subjective that, you know, which direction the Herr report went or not. And I think the thing that I was most referring to when it comes to the Herr report and the astonishingly misleading was just how much attention the section on Beau Biden got when the report first came out, and then reading the transcript to see, you know, the president saying that he, you know, remembered the date, May 30th, but he was sort of searching around for the year. He's like, was it 2015?
Right.
I mean, I think that these are the kinds of things that in depositions are fairly typical. And if you look at what the former president Trump has said in different depositions, like not being able to identify, for example, E. Jean Carroll, mistaking her for his ex-wife.
Yeah, she's not my type. That was his defense against her accusation that he raped her. No, she's not my type. But then in the deposition, he saw a picture of her and thought it was Marla Maples, who was this type.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, I just feel like there are lots of examples in the transcript of President Biden, you know, sort of fumbling around, mixing up years, not being sure when he left office exactly. But it's a bit out of context in the way that he decided to highlight it in his report to make this point about not knowing within years when his son died. I mean, to me, that felt unfair.
In the hearing, someone identified, looked through the transcript and found one where Herr said to Biden, you have photographic recall.
And that was photographic recall of the house, to be fair, of the house in Wilmington where Biden is. So I don't know that that's necessarily a fair critique either of her. I just feel like that in the writing of that, you know what you're doing there. And I think that a part of this, you know, you can surmise or look into or try to think about, like, is this something that had to do with the fact that he knew as a, you know, Republican appointed attorney at another time and somebody who's been a Republican, that he's going to put out a report that says he's not charging the president because he couldn't find evidence of crime and because he gave back these documents, cooperated with the FBI, unlike the former president, that he needed some cover and something to put out there to say, here's a thing that you can run with if you're a conservative to say, see, all those things you thought about Biden and his memory are true.
Okay, let's move on. Last night's results. We're recording this on Wednesday, so last night was Tuesday night. Trump's candidate in Ohio won. Bernie Moreno or Marino?
Marino, like Dan Marino.
Okay.
Which always surprises me when we have places and people who seem to pronounce their own names incorrectly. Like Florida, Punta Gorda. Like in Spanish, it's Punta. But anyway, whatever.
Bernie Marino. And he's Trump's choice. That's going to be a close race between him and Sherrod, isn't it?
Yeah, it's certainly most likely to be. Sherrod Brown and John Tester are probably the two most vulnerable Democratic incumbents. John Tester is the senator from Montana.
Sure.
Obviously, Montana and Ohio are states that now very much lean toward Republicans in presidential years. Tester hasn't had to run in a presidential year when Trump was on the ballot. He's got to do that this time. Sherrod Brown, same situation. Sherrod Brown, the way he talks about economics and unions and white working class voters, certainly a lot different than the way the Democratic Party does writ large, as the party's become sort of more urbane and moved away from kind of culturally blue collar white voters.
I think though there are a lot of Democratic senators consciously do talk about labor and talk about working people.
Yeah.
But Sherrod, that's, you know, I was in Akron and Dayton last week at the Ford plant there, and the guys were really happy with the new contract, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so, no, that's going to be a real race because Tim Ryan ran a good campaign last time and lost to J.D. Vance, but Tim Ryan wasn't a three-term incumbent.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think Sherrod Brown is somebody who people know. They know him throughout the state. I also think it's kind of funny because in places like Cleveland and the like, he's very popular with Black voters also. And Black voters are a huge piece of Ohio overall. And, you know, so he's able to do well with a broad spectrum. I think that Marino is somebody who clearly has Trump's endorsement. This is clearly Trump's party.
Well, let's talk about Trump's party. Because he's taken over the party, the Republican National Committee, right?
For sure.
And I want to ask you about some of the people there. Chris LaCivita interests me, and he's basically taking over the RNC, I would say, functionally, because he both works for Trump, the Trump campaign, and the RNC. And he ran Ron Johnson's campaign last cycle, and did something very similar to what he's doing now with Trump, or what Trump is doing. I think Trump laid out a 16-week ban for abortions after 16 weeks as his proposal, which is what Ron Johnson did. And it was at first, you know, Ron Johnson had been for no abortions whatsoever, but LaCivita says, well, Ron Johnson said, whatever the people decide, it should be. And so I think this is a very crafty guy, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Chris LaCivita has been around a long time. I've known him since he ran Ken Cuccinelli's bid for governor in Virginia mm-hmm. Some time ago. He's a professional Republican practitioner. An operative who's been around, like I said, for a while. He understands the game. He understands delegates, which he's been a major player in pushing for more of these winner-take-all contests so that we would have what we got, which is a nominee in Donald Trump earlier than one might expect in a competitive primary.
Is the Republican National Committee going to pay for Trump's legal bills, do you think?
You mentioned La Civita, and when Lara Trump had first come out and said, well, you know, maybe it's a good idea, maybe it's something we'll look at, maybe something we'll think about. La Civita was asked on the campaign trail about this, and he was like, absolutely not. And I believe he used an expletive in there about it. I think there's going to be this tension within the party about whether or not they should be doing that. I mean, these legal bills are racking up. I mean, he's got 4 criminal cases. He had 2 civil cases that are costing him quite a bit of money.
It's like a $500 million between the two.
Potentially that he owes the state of New York, and $50 million in the past year and a half or so that he's had to pay his lawyers, or, you know, his supporters have had to pay his lawyers, because several of the groups that have been supporting him have been paying those bills, have been footing those bills.
Is that a GoFundMe, or is that a how's he done that?
I think, you know, you could almost call it a metaphorical GoFundMe, but it goes through super PACs like Save America, which is one of his super PACs that has been footing a lot of the bill.
Oh, I like the name Save America.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of these names
that makes me like them.
People for Puppies and Freedom.
Yeah.
You know, we can have those kinds of names, and everyone always has these vague, sort of very patriotic sounding names that are clearly have other motives.
But anyway, there other groups have been paying, but I just wonder if the when push comes to shove, if the RNC is going to be paying for some, because the rationale is these criminal cases against them are all political.
Yeah, I think that's where the tension is going to be between someone like La Civita and Lara Trump and, you know, the man who's technically the chairman, Whatley, who is the former chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party.
I also think, you know who else might figure into this equation? Trump.
No kidding. And he's got
I made myself a family laugh. Member.
He's got a family member with his name who's there to advocate for him. And Chris La Civita is going to do what Trump wants.
That's right.
He's going to be the go-between with the campaign. It's not that he's necessarily going to think it's a great idea as the chief operating officer to go ahead and do that. But if Trump's not able to raise money, and I have to tell you, I saw this strange digital ad from Trump asking for money, but then sort of ad-libbing and riffing and going, well, I know it's a tough time for a lot of people, you know, because of Biden's economy.
Oh.
If you can't give, don't give. But, you know, maybe when you can give, give. I was like, this is the weirdest ask for money I've ever seen.
That does not sound like Trump. He said today, I guess he said today on Truth Social, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And
March 20th, 2020 was an interesting time.
Yes, that's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a traditional line that a lot of people use, but sometimes maybe not thinking exactly about where we were March 20th in 2020, about to kick off the worst pandemic in 100 years.
I think it was a Reagan line, right?
Yeah, I think that was Reagan in the 80 campaign.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And of course, we were in the middle of stagflation then when he said it. But man, 4 years ago, yes, it was people were isolated at home.
I think maybe he means 5 years ago.
That'd be funny if he corrected his tweet.
Maybe I should say 5 years ago, because 4, we know where we were. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it was Dr. Fauci's fault. Maybe he'll do that.
Are you better off than you were 4.5 years ago? That could be it.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned a lot in isolation. I figured this out, for example. A watch pot never boils. Not true.
It eventually boils. It's just really annoying. Yeah.
So also, he was terrible. Remember he was saying that Obama had left the shelves empty for all this gear that you need?
PPE, yep.
But he had been president for 3 years. So if he knew the shelves were empty, he had 3 years to fill those shelves in case we had a pandemic.
Well, and there was criticism, you know, I'm speaking of Dr. Fauci, some criticism where, you know, he had been asked about Trump shutting down the National Security Council's group that was looking into pandemic preparation, pandemic preparedness. And he said, yeah, it'd be a lot better if we had that still there. And that was something that Trump did wind up shutting down. And I think this is one of those things that
something that Obama had established, right?
Right. And this is the thing that's you know, this campaign is coming around, people talking about inflation, which is, you know, down. But of course, I think people are conflating things like interest rates being up and harder to buy cars or harder to buy houses with something like inflation, which, you know, has kind of come back down, but also people needing to realize a new normal at the grocery stores after the pandemic. You know, relitigating the case of COVID. I mean, I would argue that Biden was elected and won in 2020 because of Trump, because of Trump's handling of the pandemic. That's what people wanted to see as a change. And it is interesting to think about Trump saying, are you better off 4 years ago? It is like this sort of, as Josh Shapiro, the Pennsylvania governor, says, it's like a bit of a brain fog that's happening. And we're not hearing a lot about, even from Democrats, about what COVID was like during Trump and trying to remind people of what that was.
Yeah, well, maybe Biden should use that Truth Social, what do you call that, message or tweet? It's not a tweet, it's a
post.
There you go.
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Yeah, and use that as a video. I could see that. Yeah, sure. Are you better off 4 years ago?
Let me talk about some of the language he uses. He likened immigrants to animals. Said Mexico is emptying its prisons. Has there been any documentation of that?
There's certainly no evidence that we've seen of Mexico emptying its prisons and sending people here. I think in the last rally, he modified that a bit to talk about how MS-13 gang members who are already in the United States are not people, right? He was saying that some of them are not people, and you know, you might not call them people. I don't call them people or something. And I think that that's where he sort of modified too.
But well, those people, those gangs are terrible, and so there's truth to that,
right?
But this statistic is brought out all the time that Americans commit more crime than immigrants who aren't Americans yet. Let me ask you about the voters that Biden seems to have lost. And I'm talking about young people who, you know, the Dobbs decision brought young people in the midterms to, and in 23 to the Democrats, but on Gaza and on Israel, do they know what Trump's, you know, view of Israel is and his, how tight he is with Netanyahu? And is that going to be developed as an issue?
Or is he tight with Netanyahu, right? I mean, he's sort of been on both sides of the issue of Netanyahu considering.
Trump, I think, has always just been tight with Netanyahu.
He was pretty upset with Netanyahu after Trump's own election because Netanyahu called Biden to congratulate him. And he thought that he was so tight with Netanyahu that he, this has nothing to do with policy. This is all personal stuff.
Oh, right? Yeah. But that lasts that long. Yeah. Anyone is a hardliner on Israel, it is Trump.
Yeah. When it comes to policy, for sure.
They moved the embassy to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm. And recently said that he can't understand why, if you're Jewish, you would vote for the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party hates Israel, his words. And other Republicans don't understand then why 2/3 of American Jews do vote Democratic traditionally. And it has a lot less to do with simply a question of Netanyahu. I think there's a lot of people, including in Israel, who separate out Netanyahu and Zionism for wanting Israel to exist. The two things are different. I mean, it's why Netanyahu has such a low approval rating.
Right. I mean, and he can't call an election now because if he did, he'd lose. And he just has his very right-wing coalition that has a majority. So he's not going to call for an election. But no, yeah. Israelis don't like Netanyahu, and there's just kind of no question about that. But I wonder how Biden and how Democrats are going to get that message out that, if anything, Trump would be worse on Israel.
Right. And you had Jared Kushner, I believe, the other day, according to The Guardian, saying that, you know, the beachfront property would certainly be kind of ripe for developing in Gaza, which is clearly, you know, a lot different than anything that people on the left would want.
What kind of brain comes up with that? Because what you're seeing are people crammed together in these tents and starving, many of them, and dying. And he comes up with, they'd make a great beachfront hotel.
Yeah. And this is the thing that I think it is the task, as you're saying, of the Biden campaign to make the threat urgent enough for younger people and progressives to say, look, you might not love me with everything that I do, but I'm listening to you and willing to adjust, as opposed to what the alternative is here. You know, Biden likes to say, don't compare me to the Almighty, compare me to the alternative, but he needs to make that sale to younger people. And, you know, I think there's a real danger for the campaign. They know this danger of younger people staying home. I don't think they're going to vote for Trump. I don't think that's what they are concerned about. It's in places like Michigan, where they either stay home or lodge a protest vote, and then you wind up electorally losing an election.
Yeah, Michigan is one of those battleground states. Minnesota had even a higher number of cast uncommitted.
Yeah, and also was a very close state in 2016 as well.
Yes, in 16, very close. Again, that is, we have a large Somali population that's Muslim. We have a large Eritrean, you know, Egyptian population. And a lot of young people, I think, are upset, and rightly upset, about the way Israel is conducting this war. I mean, outraged. I think that Biden came late to criticizing Israel publicly. And that is a problem, because after Dobbs, young people were our people. And by R, I mean R, not your R.
Democrats.
Not your, yeah, but not your R.
From your perspective, I understand. You know, I think in 2022, younger people were, I think, the highest percentage of any age group that voted D. And look, Democratic Party is a diverse party. And I mean that diverse, not just racially, but from a generational standpoint, too. And they need to appeal to a much broader array of interests than Republicans do. It's one of the things why it's actually easier for pollsters to poll in Republican primaries, because they don't have to do as much waiting to get too much in the weeds about this. But, you know, when you have so many different groups, you have to do a lot more adjusting to make it work. When one party is 90, 95% white, you don't have to do as much work.
So polling Republicans is easier.
It is. But it's also the message that they have to put out, too, is similar, because you're essentially going toward one group.
So, yeah, their messaging is pretty consistent. And Democrats, I've always said, our bumper stickers end with continued on next bumper sticker. We,
yeah, exactly. It's hard to fit it all in.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. We got, you know, issues are complicated, especially when Democrats are. Hey, let me ask you about Stephanopoulos's interview with Nancy Mace.
Oh, sure.
I don't like Nancy Mace particularly, and I do like George Stephanopoulos. I thought he was wrong to continue asking the same question essentially over and over again after she clearly was triggered.
How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about
Donald
Trump.
No, you are shaming me.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting.
Why are you supporting someone who's been found liable for rape?
I just answered your question.
What is the answer?
He was not found guilty in a criminal court of law.
Whether he had meant to trigger her, which he didn't, clearly. But no matter how many times he would say, that wasn't my intention. I didn't mean to trigger you. I don't know if he said that. It would have been helpful if he did. What did you think of it as someone who interviews people? Or is this a touchy?
No, I mean, I watched it a couple of times and was curious about it too. I usually do a lot of the answering of the questions rather than the asking.
That's true, so, yeah.
Given that you're a question asker, it might be something that, you know, you could write to ABC. And I bet if you told them, hey, you know, I want to be on for Counterpoint, they might have you on for that. He would spar with you on this, I think.
Okay, well, you're not expressing your opinion now and about whether George went too far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that is interesting because she, you know, they obviously played the clip at the beginning. It seemed like what I was wondering about it is whether or not they had given her a heads up that they were going to talk about her comments previously on rape, because they did play the, you know, extended clip of her talking about it in a pretty strong way. And she didn't seem surprised when he asked the question at first. So I thought it was curious the kind of turn that she took in it. You know, it felt like
she set him up.
I don't know who said who. I mean, look, it's a Sunday show. People want eyeballs. I think the word you're looking for is awkward. That was awkward.
Yeah, to say the least.
Or as my daughter would say, my 11-year-old daughter, cringe. So cringe.
Oh, great. How old are your kids?
Yeah, my son's 14, my daughter's 11. So they can at least get up and make themselves breakfast, which is nice now.
Oh, yeah, they can do all kinds of things. You can put them to work, really.
Too many things, too, sometimes.
You have your 14-year-old mow the lawn?
You know, I have him take out the trash and the recycling, and we live on a little bit of a hill, so he has to navigate the mud sometimes, which is good for a kid, you know?
Okay, well, good.
I don't know if you've read the book, the parenting book. There's a Jewish mom put out a book called The Blessing of a Skinned Knee.
Yes.
And I always thought that was a really good, number one, book, but a good just mantra, you know, and of parenting values. Like, it's okay if your kid gets hurt. It's okay. They got to figure it out. No big deal.
And of course, Montanaro is you must be Yiddish.
Yeah, it's Yiddish for grew up in Queens. Yeah, my mom's mom was Jewish actually, but
there you go.
Us New Yorkers all intermingle. I actually told a college girlfriend that once who was Jewish, and her mom was very skeptical of all the vowels in my name, and then she heard about my grandmother. She goes, "Oh, well, then you're Jewish. It goes down to the mother."
It does. But it was your mother's mother.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, good. Well, there you go. You're Jewish.
Pauline Kaplan.
Well, you're Jewish then.
There you go. I happily accept that.
That's great. When are we going to have a trial? I want a trial.
Well, we thought we were going to get one starting on the 25th. Not going to happen. It looks like sometime late April. So we're going to have the same week that the Supreme Court has taken up the immunity hearing on whether or not a president is actually above the law. We may have this hush money case starting in New York.
But he didn't do the crime while he was president on this one, right? He paid hush money that was before he was president.
Right. This was during the 2016 campaign, sort of trying to allegedly cover up these affairs that he was having.
Alleged affairs.
Or alleged affairs. He did pay, but it was to cover up alleged affairs.
Let's say what we're talking about. Stormy Daniels, the adult film actress. And Karen McDougal, a Playboy model.
Playboy playmate.
Yeah. I think Stormy Daniels got $130,000 through Michael Cohn, and that Karen McDougal got $150,000 through the National Enquirer or something like that.
It's a catch and kill story. Yeah. I mean, that was the idea. This case is essentially, it's complicated, but it's about how it's basically about fraudulent business practices to use business funds to pay for this. And it had to be in furtherance of another crime, which I don't think they even have to say which crime. They just have to say it's in furtherance of a crime. But if they're identifying it, I think they'll say that it's a campaign finance violation.
Yeah, because you can't use $130,000 for that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But like you said, this was before the election in 2016.
Well, you know, he wouldn't have won if this had come out, the Stormy Daniels. I really don't think so. And remember, he had done the grab them by the
right.
Yeah, he had just been recovering from that. And if this came out or these came out, I think he would have lost.
There were a lot of moments in that campaign that I think a lot of people thought were going to be enders. I mean, I think starting out talking about John McCain and liking people who weren't captured, and Corey Lewandowski, who helped run his 2016 campaign, said that he thought that was the end. He told his wife that he was quitting because the campaign was over. And then their numbers just kept going up.
I thought it was the end, too. I was incensed and nothing. And then there's been a kind of a million of those. But I do think the Access Hollywood tape almost did it. And then you had Comey, which sort of undid that. But if this had come out, the adult film actress and the playmate, I think he would have lost. It was so close, but they didn't. So people say, well, what this payment thing is such a little thing. It really made the difference, and it made a historical difference. And how is he going to testify? Let me ask you this. If you're his lawyer, he has said he denies having sex with both of these women. If you were his lawyer, would you recommend that he testify?
No lawyer recommends that their client testify, generally. and there's certainly somebody who doesn't hew to talking points, let's say, as Trump is, it's unlikely that a lawyer would want him to. But the lawyers aren't in charge here. You know, I mean, I was in court when the judge in this case set the trial date, and I was watching Trump. And there were moments where he motioned for his lawyer to come over, and he would tell the lawyer something. And then the lawyer would go up there and say something that was really unrelated to the case at all. He would just say something like, as my client reminds me, this case is completely unfair in a political nature. Nothing to do with anything. So, you know, the fact is, if Trump wants to do it, he's going to do it. And if he doesn't, he's going to talk about it afterward. So I don't know how much difference one way or the other what a lawyer feels or thinks in his case is going to make. But I think what's interesting about these four cases is that they reflect conduct from Trump before, during, and after being president. And I think that that's quite remarkable. And I think that there's a lot of people, even who would maybe vote for Trump, who I think do want to see these cases litigated, because I think a lot of them think he would be acquitted. I think that most independents and certainly moved more in the direction of feeling Trump did something illegal after the Select Committee hearings for the January 6th Select Committee hearings 2 years ago.
Now that trial is hanging by a thread, right?
Yeah, they are. I mean, just timing wise, I mean,
things
are looking more and more like they're going to be kicked past the election. You know, we do a podcast at NPR called the Trump Trials Podcast, which I'm on. And, you know, I like to talk about how there's these three D's that is Trump's legal team strategy. And that's dismiss, delay, distract. If he can't get it dismissed, he's going to try to get it delayed, and he's going to try to distract, like the Fani Willis case. The hearing really delayed things a couple of months. So that's what they do. They're very good at it, and they very
Fani Willis helped on that one. Out.
Yeah, well, they will look for whatever vulnerability and whatever crack that they can get into and really burrow into it.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Domenico Montanaro.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant eraser foundation.
What is a particular interest note for you these days? Like, I'm interested in Ukraine. Do you think we're going to get Ukraine funding?
You know, I thought it was interesting to see Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, float this idea of a no-interest loan to Ukraine, which maybe he thinks that'll get some House Republicans on board. But I don't know. I mean, you're seeing Rand Paul, the senator from Kentucky, now saying that he was going to hold up funding for this deal that they have to keep the government open because he thinks the government's spending too much money. So it just takes one person, as you very well know, to gum up the works. And the Republican Party, you know, over the last 10, 15 years really has become way more ideologically purist. And they have moved very far to the right. And you just don't know. You don't know if you're going to get anything through on a lot of this. I think that the Biden administration is looking for different ways to get Ukraine the funding and money that they need. I thought it was interesting watching the BBC. The guy opened the broadcast saying, Republicans in the U.S. Congress are continuing to hold up funding to Ukraine while Germany today is just sent hundreds of millions of dollars. I was like, wow, that is quite something that American politics resonates that much where people really know where and why funding isn't getting through. As far as what I'm interested in, I mean, I think the Ukraine stuff is interesting, but for the election, you know, I think that third parties are the thing that I'm really kind of stuck on a bit. I talked to Kennedy's campaign last week, Robert F. Kennedy.
Where is he polling these days?
He's in double digits in a lot of polls. Uh-huh. And, you know, there was a Quinnipiac poll out in Michigan, which, you know, I mean, I take polls overall with a grain of salt, but I look at the trends on it, which I think is the most important thing to do. And he's, you know, 10% or so in Michigan. Biden winds up being more hurt by RFK Jr. in Michigan. Early polling had shown that maybe he pulled more from Trump than he pulled from Biden. And the Biden campaign was telling me that they were very concerned about someone like him.
I think he was known for his anti-vaxxer stuff, which is more a Trump follower issue. And he did just win a very valuable endorsement from the American Association for the Advancement of Measles, Mumps, and Rubella.
Well, you know, I think that the issue for Democrats is that he is not campaigning on that, right?
Yes. That's something he's know completely about not campaigning on that. Yeah.
Right. He's campaigning on a very progressive platform overall. When talking to them, he's campaigning on anti-corporate greed, pro-environment, anti-war. If you're campaigning on that stuff and talking about seeing a lot of his rallies having people under 35, those are huge potential red flags for the Biden campaign. And that's why you're seeing now Democratic groups starting to pop up that are anti-third party, that are starting to run ads. Because I don't think Trump is going to get above 46, 47%. He didn't get above 47% in either of the two elections that he ran in previously. I don't think that there's a majority that he can get for him getting elected. And third parties really are a path that will and could pave.
That's what happened in 16. That's what happened in 16 with Stein and Johnson. Johnson for the Libertarian Party, right? And Stein for Green.
Mm-hmm. And she's running again.
So this makes it hard because there's a limit to how high Trump can go. And you're right. It's been about 46, 47%. I'm worried. Is Trump going to pardon the January 6th rioters?
He's certainly promising to. I mean, listening to his rallies lately, he makes a very consistent feature of his rallies, this very strange, I find, salute to the January 6th prisoners, people who are who've been convicted of being at the Capitol, of participating in a siege at the Capitol, and calls them hostages.
There seems to be a commercial there, I think. I don't know. If I were making a commercial for Biden or an independent expenditure, all you have to do is show some footage from that and saying he says these people are hostages and that he wants them released.
I think clearly this election, there's two things that the Biden campaign is going to be running on. And that's January 6th/democracy as one thing. Yep. They're going to try to do as much as they can to remind people of that. They feel like this is a huge moment in this and that people have just forgotten a lot of what Trump stood for. And they want to remind people. And abortion rights, of course. And this is the first presidential election since the Dobbs ruling. And I think that those two things, they're hoping, will make people feel like it's Trump is an urgent enough threat to not vote third party or not stay home and to vote Democratic. But it's a tough sell. And the president, you know, is not the best messenger. They don't, Democrats kind of bite their fingernails.
He doesn't do rallies, or is it?
Right. He's a senator, and nothing against senators.
You know? No.
But, you know, that's why there was always this adage that, you know, governors make great candidates or better candidates because for president, because senators, you know, get into Senatees, they, you know, talk like Washington, and that makes the policy go around, but it doesn't do a lot in this country for, like you said, fitting a slogan on a bumper sticker.
The youth vote, again, I'm going back to Gaza, and I'm just wondering when these young people will find out that Trump is going to be worse.
Well, I think that there are a lot of people who obviously feel very strongly about what's happening in Gaza and blame President Biden. I mean, his numbers on this are not good. I mean, we have not seen, I can't remember in modern times when we've seen protests on State of the Union night outside the White House, maybe during the Iraq War. I'm not certain of that, but it's not an usual thing to see. And it's kind of hard to win people over when they feel as strongly as they do. The White House is hoping there's 7.5 months till the election.
God, it's going to be long, and a lot of stuff's going to happen between now and then.
Yeah.
Have you heard Trump say that he's the only one that can prevent World War III?
Yeah, he said things like that. You know, he alone can fix everything.
That was the first election, but I guess. Mm-hmm. But he has said, I'm the only one who can stop World War III, which I think might be because he's the only one who had started.
Well, I don't know. I think that Trump, you know, he says continuously, we need to have peace. And when you look deeper into what he means by that and like what he would do for peace, you know, he would give away, it seems, a third of Ukraine potentially. That would certainly bring peace, quote unquote. Russia probably would, you know, he would broker some sort of deal with them in that way. But that's not something obviously the Ukrainians want to accept.
Yeah. And also, I'm not sure the Russians would either, because they want to get rid of Ukraine. They want Ukraine not to exist. They want it to be part of Russia. I hope we can get the funding to them. And now, will we keep the government open? That's the other question, I guess.
Yeah. We've had, this would be the sixth almost partial shutdown, I think, since, what, October, maybe, which is just kind of crazy.
Well, where are you going next? Do you have, do you go to rallies? Do you go to Trump rallies?
Yeah, I go once in a while. I went to Biden's campaign rally in Philadelphia. I wanted to sort of see what it was like considering it or outside Philadelphia in Delaware County because I went to his kickoff in 2020 to see the difference there. You know, he still has a very loyal following of people. This is more of an upper class, mostly white area who liked him. I was at a Trump rally in Houston a couple years ago, which was interesting. It's disturbing in the sense that, you know, as reporters, we like to talk to people, whatever their stripe, and, you know, make relationships, get to understand where they're coming from and come at things with an open mind. Going into the rally, people are seemingly happy to talk, smiling. And then this rally begins and Trump will say things almost in a very hypnotic way to get them to start chanting epithets and mean things toward the media. And it was a strange moment because I'm sitting there in the pen watching this rally and watching people sort of wag their fingers at us and chant. I just felt a degree of sadness as a human. And I looked over at this mom and daughter who I had talked to beforehand. They were chanting loudly. And as soon as I tried to make eye contact with them, they sort of like looked away, you know, almost like this humanity sort of like pierced this moment of tension. And I just find that incredibly sad.
Well, that's a metaphor for everything he's doing to this country, which is dividing us. And that would be a shame if division wins, where I think, you know, Biden is trying to put people together. That sounds corny, but it is true. This sort of flooding the zone with shit, which Steve Bannon coined, right? Which is putting out disinformation to the point where no one can tell what's disinformation and what's real information. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of chooses their own. and it divides the country. And we're really, I think, in trouble. And that is part of the stakes of this election, because if Trump wins again, it won't stop from him, the division.
Well, whataboutism is a Russian art. And it's certainly something that the Trump campaign uses quite a bit. I mean, I sort of say in a less scholarly way, I say that the Trump presidency or the Trump, you know, way to run a campaign is like, I know you are, but what am I? You know, it's kind of the Pee Wee Herman.
Explain, define whataboutism. Explain it.
Well, all it is saying to somebody when they criticize you for a thing, you say, well, what about them? What about your guy? What about liberals who say this? Or what about Republicans who say that? Instead of actually addressing the criticism. And what Trump winds up doing is taking, you know, the thing, the vulnerability that he has, which is that he might be authoritarian leaning, or he might have views to lessen the strictures of American democracy. And they'll say, Biden is a threat to democracy. Biden has these authoritarian qualities. You say Trump is divisive, as you were saying. He will say, Biden is divisive. I mean, look at how divisive. We've never had a president so divisive, because look at how he talks about me.
And but also, you know, you say the deep state, and then you start getting into this paradigm they've put together of a deep state is doing all these things that serve them and not the American people.
And if you look at the Project 2025 book that was put out by the Heritage Foundation and that was helped crafted by some people in Trump's orbit, deep state really means federal workers and the apparatus of holding up the government, the institutions that had been trusted for a long time, and saying that they want to gut those and, you know, kind of take away a lot of the things within the government that restrain what a president can do. So you can wind up, by doing that, giving a president more power, and they hope their president more power.
Hence move toward Orban and society that is not democratic.
Well, and Trump has said very nice things about a lot of dictators and strongmen along the way, including meeting with Viktor Orban earlier this month and saying that, yeah, that Hungary's president, and saying that he is a very strong man and that a country needs a strong man in charge. He's like, that's how he feels about it. That's what he likes. And I think what's interesting about that is that, sure, anybody who's in charge of something wants as much power as they can have, right? I mean, Ronald Reagan, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, they all made jokes about being able to be a dictator, but then realizing that that's not the American way, and they step back from that as a as an idea. Trump, on the other hand, is sort of very curious about it and wants to put out different ways now that he's learned from a chaotic first term where he didn't really know how to run the presidency and had a lot of people who were stopping him from doing things that he did that he thought he would want to put in place. He wants to move toward making it more possible to have the strongest man possible as president.
Yeah, that's what this election is about. Going with our traditions that we had for over 200 years, or, you know, going into an autocracy. And it's very, very, very dangerous. And you're doing a good job in and NPR and reporting. And I think if people can get their information from a lot of different sources, and NPR, of course, is very authoritative.
Well, I appreciate that. And I certainly hope that people listen and don't paint the quote unquote media with a broad brush. If people have a problem with something that I've done, and I say this to my family too, because gosh, I have to hear it from them. You know, if you got a problem with something I did, hey, I'm happy to talk about it. And reporters are willing to correct mistakes. I think that that's a good thing. We should all.
Before we go, what was your last mistake? Do you remember it?
Oh, I've made so many, they all blend together.
Okay, that's fair. I make no mistakes. So I. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's wrong.
And we'll leave it there.
And okay. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now. Now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.